I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday. And you know what we do on Fridays? It's the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. Hope everybody's safe and sound and healthy. And, what I'm listening to, a little wild thing right now. Safely quarantined at home, listening to a lot of music. Speaking of music, do you know we asked the Invisible Man to come and jam with us one night? He said he couldn't see himself doing it. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
All right. Duff's been on a roll, keeping us laughing through the pandemic. Thanks, Duff, and keeping himself busy at home, hanging out with his family and listening to a lot of tunes. Since nobody can tour right now, including Guns N' Roses. But speaking of music, I've got some new music for you, as promised. It's the debut from my new quasi-supergroup, Quarantine. We're doing 80s-era Kiss. Only the stuff that Bruce Kulick originally played on, and Bruce is involved with Quarantine. We got Joe McGinnis on guitar from Classic 78. If you haven't heard them, they play and sing songs that sound exactly like Kiss from the 70s, but they're all originals. We got PJ Farley from Trickster on bass and Ken Slucher from the Luke Bryan Band on drums. That's my kind of nerd. That's Quarantine for you. We did a couple of 80s era Kiss songs. Bruce Kulick played on one of those tunes, but this is No right here, originally recorded by Kiss in 1987 for the Crazy Nights album. So here we go. It's the debut single from Quarantine right here on Talk is Jericho.
We'll be right back.
That was the first single from Quarantine. No, No, No came out today. You can get it wherever you get your music, iTunes, Amazon, Spotify. The video is on YouTube. It was exclusive on Spin Magazine. That's pretty cool that we were involved in that. So everywhere, anywhere you can see and hear music, you can hear No, No, No by Quarantine. And you can find out more about the band tomorrow night on the Saturday Night Special, 9 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook Live page and YouTube Live. You hear the whole Quarantine story. You can ask us questions, have a couple drinks, come hang out with us. Bruce Kulick is going to join us along with Joe, PJ, and Kent. So come hang out with us. It's going to be a great time. It's 9 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night on Facebook Live and YouTube Live. It's the Saturday Night Special. Come and join us. All right. And I'm glad you joined us today for something very special. Martha Hart is here. She has not done a lot of public speaking or interviews over the last 20 years. But you're going to be seeing her a little bit more now because she's not only decided to do Talk Is Jericho, she's also a big part of the upcoming Dark Side of the Ring on Owen Hart. This Tuesday on Vice TV also comes up on YouTube a few days after that. But Martha's getting out there and she's going to be talking all about Owen. But I wanted to do something a little bit different with Martha here on Talk Is Jericho. I wanted to talk about the happy times, the fun times that she had with Owen, the love affair that she had with her husband, Owen Hart. Not so much about the end of his life, but the other parts of it that leading up to it, the good things. I wanted this to put a smile on people's faces. So we're talking about all of that stuff. Sure, there's a little bit about her legal battle with WWE and why she's been reluctant to speak about him up until now. But we're talking about what they used to do when Owen came off the road and Owen's relationship with his kids and what he wanted to do when he finished wrestling, which is really very fun. His favorite movies, his favorite food. And also Martha was almost one of the boys. She traveled the world with Owen to Mexico, Germany, Japan, everywhere. She also was indoctrinated into the lunacy of the Hart family at a very young age. And also she's done a lot of work with the Owen Hart Foundation in honor of Owen. So there's a lot of great stories coming up today. It's the love affair of Owen Hart and Martha Hart here today on Talk Is Jericho. So really excited to have Martha Hart with me here today for so many reasons. One, it's good to actually talk to you and hear from you and see that you're kind of doing some public appearances, which you haven't really done in a long time.
No, I haven't. And thank you for having me, by the way.
Oh, yeah. My pleasure. My pleasure. And the reason why, obviously, is the Dark Side of the Ring episode is coming up about Owen. And it's the first time we've ever seen you talk about it. And what really blew my mind is seeing Oj and Athena talk about it. Because it's funny, because talking about their dad, I found Oj on Instagram a few months ago. And it's like he's this buffed up California surf looking kid who's like a lawyer.
I know. Yeah, no, I'm really proud of him. But it's really been interesting to be involved with the Dark Side of the Ring. And before we really get into it, I just really want to thank you, Chris, for doing such an amazing job narrating the episode. And I'm just truly grateful of the work that you've done on the project. And so I just want that to be known.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's interesting because I had done a couple interviews for the show, including some stuff with Owen that we had in there. And then they asked me to narrate it. And the reason why I really wanted to is obviously some of these stories are very strange and crazy, but especially for the Owen one. And I think I've told you this before, but it's well known that Owen was a huge influence on me when I was a teenager watching Stampede Wrestling and one of the reasons why I got into the business. So it was really cool for me to kind of be involved in that. And also, once again, to kind of let people know just how amazing of a performer this guy was. And I only got the opportunity to cross paths with him a few times. But obviously, the stories that you hear, you're talking about, as you know, but for people listening, a wonderful human being, but also very much a pioneer for this style of wrestling that's completely, it's the way wrestling is nowadays. And that basically started in North America with Owen Hart for me.
Aw, well, that's so nice of you to say. And, you know, I actually didn't know that he had such a big influence on you initially. And I really loved your artwork, I have to say.
Yeah, You're going to see a picture in the documentary of when I was in high school. Like, I was obsessed with Stampede Wrestling. I appreciated kind of the style of WWE and how big it was, but I didn't know where New York was or where Dallas was. I did know where Calgary was because I'd been there with my parents before. So when I discovered Stampede Wrestling, I just was really excited about it. And then seeing kind of the guys that were smaller sized but very high flying, that's when I basically decided I wanted to be tag team partners with Owen Hart. And I drew a picture of Owen Hart and whatever my name was, Chris Irvin or whatever it was at the time, as the Stampede North American champions. That's how much of an influence he had on me.
Well, and you know, I appreciate good artwork because actually my son, Oach, he's quite an artist. So, yeah, he's lucky. He got all the blessings, you know. He's a multi-talented guy, so lucky him.
Yeah, that's what I was doing in the back of like science class or something like that. So no wonder I had no choice but to get into wrestling. But what was it that prompted you to finally try and want to make some public appearances and talk a little bit more about Owen and his whole life?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it's a project that I was interested in doing for a while. And I was really grateful when Dark Side of the Ring approached me. And, you know, I do often get people approaching me and asking me to do different projects. And I always listen to people when they approach and you know, give them an opportunity to kind of let me know what they're wanting to do. And so then Evan Husney, who's the producer of Dark Side of the Ring, he had reached out to me through the Owen Hart Foundation. And the message got to me, as they always do. And I just sort of read over his interest in doing this project and you know, this episode. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, if this is what you're interested in, then I'll take the time and I'll put together some questions for you to answer so I can get a feel for, you know, where you want to go with everything. And, you know, he really didn't know sort of the responses that I was looking for, or, you know, sort of hoping to get. But unbeknownst to him, he had actually answered everything so perfectly, just everything that I was looking for. And so then I said to him, gee, like, you know, these are really good responses. I like the way that you know, you're thinking and the way you'd like to take this. And so then I said to him, you know, well, actually, I think he actually said to me, you know, would it be okay to meet? But he's from New York, but he was working in Toronto, and it happened to be, I think TIFF was going on at the time. And so he flew to Calgary and we met, and we'd actually gone out and we had dinner, and Oge joined us and we just had a chat, you know. And what really struck me about the producers of The Dark Side of the Ring was just their complete honesty. And he was so upfront. And what I liked was that he actually wasn't sure what I wanted to hear from him, but he just told me the straight up goods. And actually what he'd said, you know, really resonated with me. And, you know, he didn't know it, but he ticked all the boxes and he said all the right things. And I have to say that working with him and also with Jason, the other producer on the project, and actually all of Vice Media, they've all been just absolutely amazing. You know, it's really been cathartic, and I feel so blessed actually to have met them, because they really told the story that I always hoped would be told. And unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to really dig into, you know, every detail about it. But I think viewers will really get a good sense of everything that happened. And I think there will be a true understanding. I think it's very informative. And I think they'll come away with hopefully a really well-rounded view of the whole situation and a real understanding of the type of person that Owen was, the life that we had together, of course, all the events surrounding the tragedy and all the aftermath after that. So I think, you know, in 44 minutes, we managed to squeeze a lot in. And I do have to remind viewers too that make sure that you watch the encore presentation, because in the encore, there's about a 4-minute sort of extra piece that talks about Owen the prankster. Mm-hmm. was the side of Owen that I loved, but it could drive me crazy too, because, you know, of course, living with someone that just likes to joke all the time, you know, it could get like a little bit crazy. So there's actually one time where I said to him, Owen, please, you have to promise me, like, you have to stop playing jokes on me. And he looked at me just with that, you know, grin of his, and he's like, I'll try. I'll really, really try. And it's like, you don't have to try. You just do it, you know. But he just couldn't do it. You know, he was just such a prankster. So
what were some of the pranks that he pulled on you?
Oh, my God. Well, I tell one in the episode, so I won't tell that one. But one thing that he did to me that just drove me crazy, he knew, like, I was, like, afraid of mice. And, you know, like, who isn't, right? Nobody really loves mice. And so, but even, you know how you have, like, your tea and you have, like, it's hooked, the bag is hooked on a string. So he would take it and he would tape it into the cupboard. And so when I'd open up the cupboard door, it would swing out at me. And I would just silly things like that, you know, just little things, like, harmless, right? But it was just be like, oh my God, like, just little pranks all the time, you know. So like,
how much time does it take to tape the tea bag for that 1 second rib, right?
I know. And it's funny because Oj actually has a lot of the same sort of humor and characteristics that his dad does. And, you know, what used to kind of annoy me with Owen, I kind of find it endearing in Oj that it's kind of, I like that it's like, oh, okay, you got that sort of trait from your dad, right? So,
well, that's one of the things too, especially being the son of Owen Hart and, you know, the grandson of Stu Hart, that's kind of in the family's genetics. Even to the point, my favorite Owen rib was when Owen would call Stu and pretend to be one of his old rivals and challenge him to a fight and tell him he's in the hotel lobby. Reg Parks,
oh, I know.
If you think you're so tough, Reg, come on down and try me.
Exactly. And Stu would just buy right into it. And, you know, and then he'd think about it for a second. He's like, wait a minute. Like, that doesn't even make sense that that guy would be here. And, right. You know, and then he'd figure it out. Oh, okay, this was just Owen being Owen.
How was it for you? I mean, because you're from Calgary, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So obviously, when you grew up in Calgary, especially that time frame, everyone knows the Hart family. They're the most famous family in Calgary, even to this day, with the giant house up on Coach Hill, Signal Hill. And so how did you get involved with this, you know, this monster family of, you know, gypsies, tramps, and thieves? And what was your first impressions when you first did meet them?
Well, you know, I met Owen when I was so young. I was only 15 and he was 17 and we were in high school. And I also came from a big, crazy family. So, you know, so I was like, okay, well, you know, my family was also a bit dysfunctional too. So it didn't sort of throw me off, but, you know, it was a bit interesting. Some of my first visits up to the house, because of course the house was beautiful, but like with so many big, you know, family members and they were all giants and, you know, it was intimidating for sure. And Stu was a bit scary. I have to say the first time I met him and, I was really nervous about meeting him, but then he just kind of smiled at me and he winked. And then I thought, okay, I think I'm in, I think I'm okay. So, but, you know, yeah, it was definitely, you know, interesting. And it was a lot of mixed emotions, I guess, because it was exciting, but it was nerve wracking. And, you know, there were a lot of interesting characters always at the house. So, you know, it was, there was always something interesting happening there for sure.
Do you remember any of the interesting characters that you saw?
Well, there were always people sort of there, like fixing the old Cadillacs, or there were different, you know, wrestlers that were streaming through the houses, or, you know, even just different media people. They'd be up doing stories, or, you know, and just even the family members too. There was always, you know, like with a big family of 12, you can't help but have some drama once in a while, you know, and sort of, you know, love, but battles too. And so, you know, it was a pretty big mix of all of it.
Because they used to have, like, Stu had a bunch of Cadillacs in his front yard, some that worked, some that didn't, tons of cats inside the house. I remember the cats would be running all over the place. Even to this day, when I'm eating at my house and a cat jumps on the table, I swipe the cat off and I say, this isn't Stu's house. Get off the table.
Exactly. Yeah, there were always a lot of cats. And, you know, of course, they had the wrestling ring in the backyard. And so it was very, you know, certain that this was a wrestler's house. And so, you know, yeah, definitely lots of interesting components wrapped all into one in that household.
I love the fact that you met each other when you were both so young. This is basically before Owen even got into the business. Did he talk to you about he was going to go start wrestling, and how did you used to go to the matches at the pavilion? And
well, actually, you know, Owen, he wasn't ever going into the business, which was so interesting when I met him. Of course, like, we were just in high school, but we were working towards going to university and then eventually went to university, and Owen was at school. He actually gone to the University of Calgary on a wrestling scholarship, but he was a like a true athlete. He was a 4-star letterman. He did, you know, he was in football and rugby and track and wrestling, but that's where he got his scholarship from, was wrestling. So he was at university. We were there together, and he was going to be a phys ed teacher. That was sort of the plan. And you know, I kind of describe it in my book how, you know, he slowly sort of like it evolved where he got into the wrestling business, and his dad was, you know, the business was struggling because at that time Vince was just sort of taking over all the smaller territories, and his brother Bruce approached Owen and said, you know, geez, we're really hurting and we need some new fun entertainment. You're this young, big, blonde guy, and you're a heart, which carried a lot of weight in Calgary. And, you know, there was a time in Calgary when, you know, there wasn't really much entertainment in Calgary or sports. You know, we didn't have an NHL team. Right. We did have football, but it was CFL. And, you know, so wrestling was such a big iconic thing in Calgary, and people would go, you know, faithfully every Friday night. So, so it was a big deal in Calgary. And so then Owen, you know, he was quite a sensitive person, and he really loved his dad. And then that was all it took, was just that prodding about, gee, you could really help dad, and, you know, really help the business. We're struggling. We're like, you know, we're bleeding money here. So, you know, could you help out? And so Owen went and worked just in the summer under a mask and just kind of got started. And then he'd worked under a mask here and there, but then he worked in the summer as himself, and it really helped to rejuvenate the whole territory. And then it was just kind of one of those things where he'd had an issue at university where, like, he hadn't taken one of the classes that he was supposed to take. So then he had to wait. He had to take a semester off, not by his choice, but he had to wait until he could sort of, you know, write the, like, I think it was the English equivalent or something. So he had time. So then he just stayed through the summer and then into the following semester. And then by the end of that semester, then he was like, now he was like this staple in Stampede. So then it just kind of, he thought, well, I'll just kind of keep going like a little bit longer. But it was always just one of those things where, you know, it was never the long-term goal, and it wasn't the plan to stay in it. But then, you know, as life kind of picks you up and carries you away, it has other plans, you know, and your original plans get left in the dust. And that's sort of what happened with Owen. But, you know, he tried for a long time to get out of the business, and he applied to the fire department every year for years. And at that time, it was really hard to get on the fire department. You had to have a university degree. It was one of those, like, really, you know, sought after jobs, especially in Calgary. And his brother was a firefighter, and so was his brother-in-law. So he kind of knew that life, and he liked it, and he wanted to pursue that. So that was something that he tried. But he also was a Canadian and an American citizen. So he also applied to be a customs agent because he thought it would be ideal, because he lived in Calgary, but he was an American, well, and a Canadian, but he could work for customs. And so that was another job that he tried to apply for, and he always regretted that he didn't finish his education, because he was actually a really bright guy, and he could have done it, but, you know, life picks you up, and then we got married, and then
well, the problem is too, Martha, is he was so damn good.
Yes.
at pro wrestling, you know, and it's one of those things. And you've mentioned so many things that I'm going to ask you about, but he was obviously a natural right from the start. Cause I watched him, like you said, in 86, and he'd probably, I don't know if he had gone to Mexico then, you could probably tell me more about that, but he was so athletic, acrobatic. He could talk. He had the look. He looked cool. He was young. You know, like as a kid, I was 16 and he was only 5 years older. So he was probably 21 years old that you could relate to that. So I think once again, fire department, all of the stuff and gym teacher, but man, you're so good at this. I'm sure it was hard for him to say no. And also he probably thought, I'm actually doing pretty good at this.
Yeah. And he was a natural, he was a natural athlete and he was good at it. And it was always like, well, it was always a good thing that he could fall back on. And it was, you know, it provided a good living. But the one thing at the time, it's different now, I think, but you know, they didn't have contracts. So if you got injured, then that was a big, you were always taking a big risk. So, okay, yes, it was good. But when, you know, if you were a practical person and you thought, well, okay, I have to look at this long-term, like what if I get injured, then I have no work. And then what am I going to do? And I don't have, you know, any sort of benefits or things like that. So that was always a concern too, that he always thought, yeah, like this is a good plan B for now. Yeah. But you know, it was not where he just wanted to keep being and like develop that career. But you know, I mean, we were definitely grateful for the job because, you know, at the time, like that was our plan B.
Sure. Which makes sense. Let me ask you another question that you brought up. That's interesting to me. You mentioned he was very close with Stu.
Yeah.
And that he never wanted to let Stu down. But Stu was 50 years old when Owen was born. Owen was the youngest of 12, for people listening. So when Owen is 15, 16, 17, Stu is 66, 67 years old. There's a little bit of an age gap there, but Owen still was very close to his dad that could have been his grandfather at this point.
You're right. And it's so interesting because I really think, and I think, you know, everyone would agree that Owen was, I think, Stu's favorite son, favorite child.
Really?
And they were just really close. You know, they actually were very similar in sort of their philosophy of life. And, you know, they were both really straight arrows, clean cut guys that, you know, were really family oriented. And I think that really bonded them. And then, of course, Owen, because he was such a good wrestler, which Stu loved, then right away that, like, for Stu, that just, it was an instant bond with, you know, with Owen, because Stu loved amateur wrestling. Stu loved amateur wrestling more than anything, more than professional wrestling. And all he ever talked about was amateur wrestling. And he really wanted Owen to go to the Olympics. That was sort of his dream. And Owen worked really hard at amateur wrestling. And he, you know, back in the day, he'd won like the city championships, the provincials, he went to nationals. But then when he sort of reached a certain level, then he kind of felt like he'd achieved his goal in that area. And then it, you know, it kind of waned his interest in it. And even when he went to university and was, you know, there on a wrestling scholarship and was on the varsity team, it was a struggle for him. You know, he wished he could just focus on university. But, you know, when you play a sport for university, like it's pretty all consuming. So, you know, but he knew it was a nice link with his dad, and he liked that part of it. You know, he liked that he could connect with his dad on that level, and his dad appreciated it. So, yeah, and Owen really loved his dad. So, you know, it was hard to not do it because he knew it made his dad happy.
When he started kind of traveling around the world, like you mentioned, finding success because he was so good, his career mirrored a lot of us that came from Calgary, and probably because Owen did it first, of going to Japan and Mexico and England and Germany, and I was always a year or two behind him. But did you travel with him during those times?
I did. Yeah. I mean, not initially, you know, but once he was established, then we went everywhere together for a while there. I'd taken, well, about 2 years off of work, kind of here and there. I'd come back, I'd work, and then I'd take it off. But we went to Mexico several times, Japan several times together. We lived in Europe for 2 years on and off, in Germany and Austria, and traveled to France and England. And he worked in all those regions. And so, yeah, and it was quite an adventure. And actually, that was right when we got married. And so I always say, like, that felt like the most normal time, because I actually could see my husband every day. And that was really nice. And, you know, so it was the perfect timing for that time in our life that we could do that together. And then, you know, and then Oj came along 3 years after we were married. And then we had to sort of, we were kind of like traveling gypsies, but then we had to sort of anchor. And
so tell us about that, because you're like, you know, you're one of the boys almost traveling around all that much. Tell us about, like, because I know Germany, you would stay in the same place for 6 weeks, 6 months, or whatever it was. And tell us kind of about where you would live and how that would work for you guys if you were doing the European run.
Well, sometimes we had an apartment. Like, I loved it when we lived in Vienna. We actually had a little apartment, and that was great. But a lot of times we were actually living just in caravans, like a Winnebago kind of type thing. And so, and we would be parked in the parking lot, like at the arena. So we were just really like carnies, you know, and it was a bit tricky because, you know, I'd have to like shower after the shows, and there was different, like they would wrestle every single night at the same venue because they would do tournaments. So it was a different sort of style of wrestling, how they did it there. And so, you know, so like Owen would have to take me in, and like I'd have to, you know, he'd have to kind of guard the door because I'd have to shower in the wrestlers like locker room kind of thing. And usually the water was ice cold because everybody had already used all the hot water. So it wasn't fun or pretty, but you know, it was an adventure, right? Like we were young, and when you're young, you can tolerate anything, you know? So
sure. Especially when you're there with the one you love.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And this is for Otto Wanz in Germany and in Austria. Cause I did the Hamburg loop. So I know what you're talking about. You'd go in those showers in the tents where the matches were. And it was super freezing, just reeking of smoke. Cause everyone would smoke back then.
Yes.
And you'd be in the same city every single night for weeks and months on end.
Exactly. So it wasn't glamorous at all. You know, it was pretty tough living, actually. You know, you were really roughing it, but the whole kind of goal was, you know, just to make money to get ahead so that, you know, like eventually you'd have something to show for it. So it was
increase your name value.
Yeah. It was worth it. And, you know, we definitely had lots of good memories, and they were really good to us. All the promoters were really pretty good to us. You know, from Mexico to Japan, especially in Germany, they were decent.
Did you, like, for example, if you were in the European, would you hang out with the other wives during the show? Would you guys kind of sit in the wives section, like at a hockey game or something?
Well, I mean, if we went to the shows, right, like then, yeah, we would sit together. But like a lot of times, because you're there every night, right, like you just wouldn't even go. But a lot of the guys, they didn't have wives either. So there were just a couple of them that had wives. And so, and some of them were foreigners, like some of them were from Italy. So maybe they didn't even speak English, or, you know, so it was, you know, but yeah, definitely, like we were all like kind of one big family. And so, yeah.
How about in Mexico? Would you, obviously you're staying in hotels there?
Yeah, Mexico was rough. You know, like the company, they were really good, and the wrestlers themselves were super nice and really accommodating. One Mexican wrestler, I don't know whatever happened to him. His name was Lino, and he was so good to us. But it was just a scary place. You know, Mexico City, especially, you know, at that time in my life, like that, it's really a third world country there. And
yeah.
You know, it's a big city. They have shanty towns. There's a lot of poverty. So it was hard, sort of like on that sort of humanitarian level, to see people that they struggled a lot there just to survive. And so that it was tough there. You know, and also too, it was a bit scary because Owen, like the wrestling arenas, you'd kind of march out and they'd spit on you. And like he actually was slashed a couple of times, like people. knives to the, yeah. So it was scary. You know, it wasn't, I'm sure it's better now, but then it was, and they didn't like the foreigners, you know, they love their Lucha Libre, like masked wrestlers. And so if you're a foreigner, then, you know, but Owen wore a mask too. There, and then they finally, at the end of it all, then they unmasked him, right? Because that was kind of like, it's the ultimate defeat if someone takes the mask off. So.
He was called the Blue Blaster. He had two Z's, I think, or two S's, the way they spelt it. I remember seeing that, the Blue Blaster. And then what was your thoughts on Japan?
Japan was really amazing. Like, it's such an incredible place. There's so many people. And yet it's so clean, so well organized, and so safe. Like, you could walk down the street day or night, no matter what, anywhere. And you never had to worry about your safety or anything. It was just, it just felt like the safest place, you know, like being in Disneyland or something.
And of course, you get treated well by the promoters and by the fans. Owen was a big star there.
Yeah, and that was definitely one thing. Like, the wrestlers were so amazing, and the promoter was really good, and they were always good to Owen. New Japan Pro Wrestling, they really treated him well, and even before, when he first started out, and he really liked it. It was hard work, because there in Japan, I think it's probably was the closest to, like, you know, you get in the ring and you are really fighting to the end, and really the only thing that's sort of fixed is the finish. And so, you know, it was hard work, because they expected a lot of you, and because they're sort of all agile and really could, you know, do all the acrobats, they wanted that too in a lot of their performers. And so, especially a guy like Owen, because that's what they were bringing him there for. And so he, you know, it was pretty grueling, his trips to Japan, and they were long because they were always about 6 weeks away from home. And then, you know, they don't speak a lot of English there, and everything's different. So it was hard. It was hard, but it was good too.
How did you like it there? Because it's a little bit of a culture shock.
I liked it. Like, I was so excited to get to go, and I want to go back. Actually, I was going to take my kids there a few years ago, just before the big tsunami hit. And then with all the, you know, the reactor melting down, then I thought, well, I better wait a couple of years. But I would love to go back there. Yeah, I really want to go.
If you did go back there, would you, especially now, this is kind of a big question, but you mentioned now that you had some clarity and some therapy. I can't remember what the exact, I don't know if it's closure or whatever, but now that you're talking, WWE notwithstanding, would you be proud to go back to a New Japan as a representative of the great Owen Hart?
Oh, wow. I never thought about it that way. So I was just going to go back as a tourist, but.
No, I understand. But the reason why I say this, Martha, and it's something that I think is very important from my end. Obviously, I respect everything on your end, but from a fan and as an influence, Owen is his, I think it's underestimated just how much of a pioneer, I keep using that word, he was as an athletic, acrobatic, smaller, I mean, he's probably 225 pounds, so not as tall, but as a performer, his legacy is incredible. And I think that's something that fans should remember and need to remember if they've never heard of Owen Hart or only know about his tragedy and not about this amazing life that he had as a performer in the ring. Does that stand out to you?
You know what? I guess if I got an invite, then I would definitely, you know, entertain it. So, but I haven't, I haven't to this date. It's not like I turned anything down, but nobody's ever approached me about something like that. And I never really gave it much thought. So, but you never know,
gotcha.
Right? Never say never. So.
But do you appreciate the legacy of that he has as a performer?
Oh,
or do you understand it?
You know what? I really do. I always thought that he was the most amazing wrestler, that, you know, he really just, like you said, he was such a pioneer. And, you know, and Owen really appreciated his fans. And that's, like, I do feel sort of bad for the fans, because, like, even just for example, in regards to merchandise, there's not a lot of merchandise that's available for Owen for obvious reasons. But that's something, actually, working with Dark Side of the Ring, not to get off topic, but just,
no.
you know, we talked about, gee, like, is there something that we could do to sort of commemorate this episode? And so anyway, long story short, we're actually going to put out some very nice t-shirts of Owen for fans. And so I'm really glad about that, because I know that fans would like to have these items of Owen's, and I think it's important.
Absolutely.
You know, and Owen, he really adored his fans. He was really good to his fans too. And actually, he enjoyed his fans' company more over the people that he worked for. And lots of times he would spend quality time with fans. And some of the fans actually became very good friends of his, you know, because he loved people, actually. He didn't ever treat anybody that, you know, it's like, well, I'm up here and you're down here. He treated everyone really equal, and he appreciated everyone for, you know, the gifts that they brought to his life. And people were really good to him. You know, they helped him a lot, and a lot of fans were really exceptional, and he enjoyed that time with him. Like, truly he did. So I'm really happy that we can do this for the fans.
He also was notorious for staying at fans' houses and having them pick him up at the airport. So much so that after he passed away, there was this like this legion of Owen's old fans that would try and like, hey, Chris, can I pick you up from the airport? Can I give you a ride? And we would say it's Owen's last rib on the boys, all these people that, you know, quite frankly, we're lost without Owen because they just wanted to hang out with a wrestler and have him come sleep in their spare room. And it's just like, leave us alone. This is Owen's thing.
I know. And you know, and that's what I mean. Like, he actually, you know, there was no differentiation for him, because he just looked at everybody like, you know, it wasn't like, well, you're on this side of the aisle, I'm on this side. He's like, he really enjoyed people, and he enjoyed authentic, real people that, you know, sort of didn't have any, like airs to them, you know? So that's, I'm really glad that I could work with the Dark Side of the Ring and kind of, come up with some nice sort of memorabilia for fans. Cause I'm really happy that, you know, that they want it for in the first place, but, you know, that now I have an opportunity to do it in a way that I feel comfortable doing it as well.
Well, the thing is too, and this is something that I don't know how much you probably haven't paid attention to anything wrestling wise in the last 20 years, but it's a whole new world now where it's not just all WWF, WWE. There's so many places that you're talking about merch line. You could do a whole merch line of Owen Hart. I can tell you of the place to go right now that has nothing to do with WWE, and you can do all that stuff. And if you wanted to do something with New Japan or AEW or anybody, even if you don't, now it's a really good time to do this, because Owen has a whole legion of performers such as myself that were not disciples of him, but very much influenced by him. So it's really interesting how the whole landscape of the business has changed to where now the Owen Hart, the legend of Owen Hart, can actually be promoted outside of WWE, because he was such a big name in so many other places.
And that's really nice to hear, because, you know, in the past people have approached me, but then, you know, after doing a little bit of investigation and research, then it always turned up that, you know, somehow there was this link with WWE. And then of course, you know, I've always just veered away from anything related to them. So then it always sort of, you know, squashed any opportunities. And I had done a few items early days, like an Atari game and different things like that. And then what we do is any sort of ventures that are sort of like merchandise oriented, we give all the proceeds to the Owen Hart Foundation. And that was always my big thrust, was that, you know, I didn't think it was right that, you know, a company like WWE would make money off of his name when, of course, you know, I hold them responsible for his death. And so I never wanted to ever do any projects with them. And unfortunately, forever, they were the only game in town. And you're right when you say, like, I don't really know what's going on in the world of wrestling. And, you know, and it's interesting because in our life together, you know, wrestling was not a very big part of actually our life together. And it actually became more a part of my life after his death, which is so odd because, you know, he was just Owen to me. He was just my husband. He was a guy that I met, you know, when I was like young and we grew up together. And it was, we had a whole different, you know, I didn't look at him like he was this wrestler. He was just the man that I loved kind of thing. And so, you know, so anyway, I didn't really follow it too much then because it was just his job, you know, to me. It wasn't like, you know, it's just like a lot of marriages, like, you know what your husband does. He goes to work every day, but maybe you're not totally enthralled in every aspect of his working life, right? And we had so much other things that, you know, and our time was limited and precious. I didn't get much time with Owen. So, you know, we didn't sort of like just, I don't know, mull over wrestling. We, you know, kind of just lived and had other interests. But then after he died, I actually, you know, learned more about it in a lot of ways. And it became more a part of my life in some ways, unfortunately, than it had
before. Than others, yeah.
Yeah, so.
What kind of stuff would you guys do when he wasn't on the road? Because like you said, too, back in those days, the schedule was insane. It's not like that anymore, but he'd be gone for, you know, like you mentioned, you know, 15, 20, 25 days a month or whatever it was. What would you guys do when he came home?
Well, you know, especially after we had the kids, like we would, you know, always be doing kid related stuff, going to the zoo or the science center or parks or, you know, that kind of stuff. And, just like activities, you know, like we're both pretty like athletic. So we would like jog or like swim or, you know, I love movies so much. So, you know, we always be going to movies and, you know, just fun stuff, hanging out, just, you know, enjoying each other's company. And yeah, that's like, that's kind of what we liked.
What were some of Owen's favorite movies?
Oh my God. Well, we did like Father of the Bride. It was like, it was a cute movie at the time.
Right.
Of course.
Martin Short.
Well, we did like Rocky, I have to say, like the first one. And Rocky III was pretty good too back in the day. Yeah, I have to think about that one for sure. But he, you know, he probably didn't like movies as much as me, but like our first movie that we ever went to, I'll never forget it, was The Verdict with Paul Newman. And it's about an old lawyer that was, you know, an alcoholic, and it was kind of his last case that he had to really like hammer home. And anyway, but I do remember that was the first movie that we ever went to.
It's funny because I mentioned I only got to meet Owen a few times. The one time I met him, we were flying on a plane from Calgary to Los Angeles, and I was going to Japan, and I think he had SummerSlam or something, so I connected through there. And just by chance, we happened to be sitting next to each other, which to me was like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting next to Owen Hart. This is great. Because I wasn't big in the States. I was working in Japan. And I could tell that he wanted to sleep, but I talked to him for a bit. I probably asked him a few too many questions just for talking. And then he ended up staying awake and we talked the whole flight there, which was amazing. And I remember he had a little travel bag that was about this big and that was what he carried his stuff in.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do you have all your stuff? And he's like, well, I keep my boots I gave them to somebody to keep or whatever. Cause I don't want to have any bags checked. Cause as soon as I get home, I want to get the hell out of the airport and my wife's going to pick me up when I go home. And I just thought it was pretty cool. He didn't even want to check a bag.
No, he had it down. He had packing down to a T. And no, he just had like his little pulley bag and then his other little carry-on bag. And, you know, you're allowed to take like two carry-ons.
Right.
He had it like to a T, just what he needed. And it's funny because sometimes like if they did sort of personal appearances or, you know how you have to go and do an interview or something, he would steal Jeff Jarrett's clothes. He'd be like, hey, I need a nice shirt. I need like, and they were the same size. So he would just steal like some of Jeff's clothes.
he also gave me some advice that I still use to this day where he said, I don't like to rush. He said, get there 20 minutes early to the airport. You can have a coffee, you can relax. And to this day, I always leave on time, unless, you know, I sleep in or whatever, to just relax in the airport for a few minutes. So you're not always rushing.
Yeah.
A little bit of Owen Hart advice there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because why put yourself through that extra anxiety, right? And, you
know. Right. How proud of you were you of him in about 94, 95? When he'd been in WWE for a bit as the Blue Blazer, then he was Owen Hart in WCW, and he goes back to WWE. He's kind of floundering, and then he does the famous angle with Brett. It just explodes him as a heel and as a character and as a performer. It makes him a legit top guy.
Yeah. Well, that was a really incredible time for him. And, you know, for me, like, I always felt like I'd seen him wrestle so many different territories and different angles. And so I guess, like, it wasn't a surprise for me that I always felt like I knew that he had, like, all of that charisma. And he really liked playing that role too, like the bad guy. And I know I was, like, thinking, oh, my God, you know, when he had that match with Brett, like, at Madison Square Garden, he was only 28. You know, he's just young, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and Brett, I think he's at least 8 or 10 years older than Owen. So he's quite a bit older. So, you know, but, like, I was just thinking, wow, like, I couldn't believe how young he was and how good he was. And that was just, like, because they show a little clip in the episode, and I just started reflecting kind of about those times. But yeah, it was, you know, he was ready for it at that time. I think, you know, he'd had quite a bit of struggles, like, you know, with the wrestling career. And then when he finally just embraced it and realized, like, this is going to be our life for a little while here. And then he put everything into being, like, as good as he could be. And it was great. I think they both really enjoyed working together. They both had, like, similar, like, sort of technical ideas. And I think too, they thought, like, in a wrestling sense, kind of in a similar way. So they knew what it took to make a good match, and they could really play it out. And they really were good. Like, they followed it to a T, even in the airports. Like, they never talked to each other, and, you know, they really, like, played out the whole part of, like, you know, not liking each other. And so they both did a good job on that end.
You know, it's interesting because you also had the two Hart brothers that were the best technical wrestlers. They're both the best characters, both the best looking guys. Like, they really were kind of the two peas in that pod of 12 kids.
Yeah, but Owen was better looking, right, Chris?
Oh, duh. I always say whenever I watch The Karate Kid and you see Johnny the heel, he always reminds me of Owen with that hair, that swoop of hair.
I thought Owen did such a good job acting like the little spoiled baby brother, you know.
Amazing. See, that's the thing about Owen is that he understood that side of the business, which, if you ask me, is the most important side. Yes, it's great if you can do the technical wrestling and all those sort of things, but it's the character. Mm-hmm. And he could play all of them. You know, whether it's the good guy or the little spoiled brat or kind of the, you know, the all these goofy personas. I remember he did commentary once, and he's just talking about, look at that, she's a hose bag. And I'm like, you can't say hose bag on TV, but it was so funny the way he said it. He just always had that kind of smirk, right?
Oh my God. Well, I know. And, you know, he was just really developing those sort of, like, acting qualities, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually something that he was just sort of embarking on. You know, he thought, well, maybe
right.
He would veer into sort of, like, more like acting. And he'd done, like, a few different things, and he did Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And so he was, yeah, he did. He and Brett had done, they filmed it in Calgary. And so they, you know, they needed, like, some, like, kind of wrestlers to be in one of the episodes. And so they went and they had to audition, and they got the part, though. And so he was just starting to break into, like, you know, kind of the acting world. And I think that he would have, like, kept going down that road as he sort of transitioned out of wrestling and, you know, perhaps sort of entertained, like, some of those sort of endeavors. Like Brett had done as well. He was, you know, I can't remember the name of the episode, but he was
Lonesome Dove or something like that.
That's right. So he'd done, like, some acting too. And like a lot of wrestlers, I mean, oh my God, look at The Rock. Like, I mean, you don't get better than that. And, you know, where did he start? Right. So it's actually, is sort of a perfect transition if you want to get out of the rough tumble wrestling gig so into something more body friendly.
You know what's interesting to me, because Owen was 34 when he passed away, right? So that was 99. And if you look at, I think I might have said this on the Dark Side show, if you look at who came into the company a few years later, because Owen was still great when he wanted to. I remember he had a match with Davey Boy in Europe that was old school Owen Hart, amazing. But you could tell he could also, you know, the matches that he's having where he's not really doing anything, putting clown noses on guys and that sort of thing. But if you look at who came in from Benoit, Eddie, Edge, Christian, Jericho, Kurt Angle, I think Owen, had he continued wrestling, would have had a whole huge career resurgence, because he would have been in there with guys who were just as good as he was in that style, who were also kind of influenced by him. And I bet you he would have said, like, oh, this is great. He might have found that passion for the business again because of who he had the chance to work with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that might have even happened, you know. At the time, wrestling had taken a very dark corner, and it was really seedy, and it was just, you know, like, you know, bad was good and worse was better, and it was just getting to like such a dark, seedy place when Owen was there. And and I guess, you know, the pendulum, it started swinging the other way after he died, because, you know, I mean, I don't think it was appealing. Like, I mean, okay, you're always going to find some audience somewhere, but I think people, the majority of people, they like wrestling the way that it traditionally was, like more sort of, you know, not too raunchy, not too dark. But unfortunately at the time, it just been going sort of on this, you know, sort of downward trajectory. And it was really unpleasant. And it, you know, it wasn't just unpleasant for Owen. It was unpleasant for other guys too.
How was it for Owen when the whole thing happened between Vince and Brett, where, you know, the old Montreal screw job thing, and, you know, Brett's leaving and I think Davey might have left, but then Owen was kind of caught in the middle of all that. What was he thinking at the time? Because he did end up coming back to WWE and got a push for a while and all that sort of thing. I mean, how did that affect him, in your opinion?
That was a really difficult time for Owen, because even though he didn't sort of share the same philosophy as Brett as far as wrestling would go, he knew that that was really crushing for Brett, what had happened with Vince and everything. And he felt bad for his brother, of course, but he was also beholden to a contract at that time. WWE, well, F then, they just had introduced a few years before that, like, you know, contracts actually, where you were locked in for 5 years, and that's what Owen was. He was locked into his contract. So he requested that he be let go too when everything happened with his brother. And they said no, that they weren't going to let him go. They just weren't. And so the way the contract worked was that, you know, if you don't work, you can't work for somebody else. Like, you don't necessarily have to work, but then you're not making any money and you can't work somewhere else. And it was a very onerous contract, you know, where it really benefited only, you know, the company, mm-hmm. not the wrestler. And so Owen was really in a tough situation. So he didn't have a choice. It was like, you either stay here or you go nowhere. So that's your choice. But it was hard, you know, it was, emotionally, it was difficult for him to see his brother so, you know, upset and betrayed, and yet have to stay and just fulfill his commitment that he'd made to the company. So it was a hard time. I mean, he preferred to leave, but they wouldn't let him go.
They did give him a raise for his contract, from what I understand, right?
So yeah, they did. They, you know, like, sweeten the pot, I guess, because I guess they were worried that he might just sit it out then and just say, forget it. Like, I mean, you know.
Right. At that point, he was already thinking about packing it in anyways, from what you're saying.
Well, you know what, like, I would say Owen was always in the mind frame of, you know, looking for an exit. But at that point in time, it was kind of like, you know, we decided that, okay, well, he would stay in it, you know, at least maybe until he was 40 or something, because he really needed, you know, to build up financially so that he could leave. And he had some ideas what he wanted to do after he left the business outside of like pursuing the acting and things like that. But what people might not actually know about Owen is that he was very good at building things, and he really? Yeah, and he liked to build bicycles. He liked to build bikes, like bicycles. And he built me a bike. And so he would take old bikes and he would refurbish them, and he just loved it. Like, he put new pedals on and gears and whatever. And so he always thought, oh, well, when I'm done this, like, I would love to have like a little bike shop where I could just put it around and, you know, like, and he liked to bike. That's another thing that we would do all the time, was biking. And so that was sort of an end dream for him. Like, when I've made my money and I'm just sort of retiring out of this business, and you know, what I'd like to do is just sort of putter around and start with bicycles. So
that's really cool. Something that no one knows that one. Did you guys ever consider moving to the States, or was it always staying in Calgary?
There was a time when we considered briefly moving when Owen was with WCW, and he wasn't with them, but he'd gone for a tryout, I think. But they required that all the talent moved to Atlanta. And so, I mean, it was a consideration for sure. But then we kind of changed our mind about that because, you know, I don't know, Atlanta is pretty far from Calgary, and it wasn't fitting into our plans at the time. But yeah, so that was one moment. That was the only time when we considered actually moving to the States. So it was a lot harder for Owen, being a Canadian, working for the WWE, because his travel was always double almost what everybody else's was, because he'd always have to connect like Vancouver or Toronto. He always had an extra leg of the journey there and back, wherever it was, most of the time.
And that point in time too, Calgary didn't have a lot of options for connections.
No.
You know, I think it was like Salt Lake City and Chicago, maybe. They didn't have anything to even New York at the time.
No, it's true. Yeah. So you were limited. So he was always on connecting flights. And he actually, back in the day, they had this little like travel book, like with all the airline schedules. And he knew, he could have worked for the airlines because he knew the schedules better than the airlines knew. He knew when flights, because he was constantly changing his flights all the time, like to make it so he could spend more time at home.
Exactly. Like you said.
And so, yeah, but you're right. There weren't loads of, opportunities to travel, you know, and connect to different places.
Last few things. Stampede pay-per-view in Calgary, one of the greatest pay-per-views of all time. You were there.
Yeah.
When it was the Hart Foundation versus Austin and the guys. How crazy was that night on your end? Because from a fan standpoint, it was one of the loudest nights I've ever experienced.
Yeah, that was a bit of a crazy night for sure. What I remember, it's interesting because, you know, like I remember at the end of the match, like they made all the Harts go into the ring. And like, I didn't know that was going to happen. And, you know, like Oj was pretty little, our son, and Owen had him, and Athena was like, she was kind of a baby, like not baby baby, but like a toddler. And so then I actually was the first one out of the ring, and you know, Vince, he'd always slip out of the arena before like anybody would even notice, right? So I actually passed him on the ramp, and he kind of looked at me like, why aren't you like back in the ring, sort of like lapping all the glory? And I just kind of looked at him and I said, I'm sorry, it's not my forte. And I just passed him on the ramp with Athena and kind of marched up. But you know, the Harts were always, you know, huge in Calgary, and people loved that they came from Calgary and they were wrestling royalty there. And I think that was like, nobody knew it was going to be the last big hurrah, right? But But actually, it did end up being, you know, I think one of the last times where they were all sort of together in the ring, and everybody was in there. So, yeah. And so it was, I'm glad that they had that memory, because I don't think that they ever got to relive that again.
Right. You're right. At this point in time, because after Owen's passing, the heart's so much tumultuousness and craziness, do you have any relationship with the family at all now?
You know, unfortunately, I don't. And that's really unfortunate. But I don't know if people are really aware of everything that's sort of transpired.
Sure, of course.
My lawsuit. But, you know, the family, they weren't that supportive of my lawsuit against WWE. And the worst part of it was that, you know, some of the family actively worked against me, and then other ones just remained silent. And, you know, that was almost as hard as the ones that worked against me. So it really, you know, when you break the trust, and I felt really betrayed and sort of left alone and without any support, then, you know, although I've forgiven them and I'm totally, you know, past that, and I wish them well, and trust me, like, my life hasn't been easy, and I certainly wouldn't wish, you know, harm on anybody. I hope life has been kind to all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some things, the damage is done and you just can't repair it. And that's one of the sort of the unfortunate sort of casualties of war, I guess, that, you know, it's just the damage is irreparable and it can't be repaired. But, you know, I let it go and I wish them well. I really do.
I know when I found Oj on Instagram, I text Natty. And I was like, have you seen Oj and Instagram? Apparently, I think Oj and Natty have spoken a little bit, at least a little bit. So that's cool.
And like, the grandkids are lovely, you know, like, I mean, I've run into some of the grandkids and, you know, and even if I run into family members, and if my kids run into the family members, I always have said, you know, you be absolutely polite and respectful. You don't be rude to anybody, you know, just be a decent person, because my philosophy is, don't let other people's bad behavior change you. And so it's like, no, you know what, you be decent. And the grandkids are really quite lovely. And, you know, anytime I see any of them, you know, I'm always courteous and I always speak to them. But I just don't have a relationship with them. You
know? I gotcha. Has Oj and Athena, did they ever watch any of Owen's matches at all? Are they interested in that side of his life?
You know what? No, not really. I mean, I'm sure they've seen snippets here and there, but to actually sit and watch, you know, not so much. Oj, he actually just graduated from law school and he's pursuing human rights law. He's just doing his master's in law. So he's pretty enthralled in that. And Athena, she's a journalism graduate and she is right. She loves animals. And so she writes for a magazine. She has a column about animal humanitarianism. So their interests
are great,
you know, and that's okay. They, you know, if they wanted to watch it, they certainly can. And I've never discouraged them watching their dad or anything, but I don't think, like, I think Owen would be happy to be honest, that, you know, that they aren't really interested in wrestling. Because he always had this goal that he wanted to be out of wrestling before our kids went to school. Because when he was young, he felt like he always had to, you know, take a lot of garbage at school just because his dad was around. And he didn't want that for his kids. And so he really wanted to be out of the business before they really kind of, like, got heavy into school, because he just didn't want that, them to have to deal with, like, oh, your dad's a wrestler or this or that. Like, and so that's kind of unfortunate that, you know, like, my kids, they still got a bit of that anyway, but, you know.
Where did you get the name Oj? It's such a unique name.
Well, Oj was Owen's nickname, because Owen's name was Owen James, so OJ. Ah. So his nickname was Oj, and I loved his nickname. And it was really hard for me, because I always called Owen Oj. And so then when we had Oj, I had to learn how to not call him. Yeah, and I wanted to name Oj after Owen, because, you know, I wanted to be named after his dad, but I didn't want to have like big Owen, little Owen, or Owen Jr., Owen Sr. So I thought, Oge, I love that name. And so that's, you know, sometimes Oge curses me for giving him that name because he's like, everybody's like, how do you say your name?
OJ?
You
know? OG?
Yeah, exactly. So, I told him, you just embrace that name. That's a good name.
It's great. No one else has it. That's awesome.
That's it. It's unique, right? So
last few things. Tell us about the Owen Hart Foundation that you started and how big it's become over the years and what exactly is it?
Okay. So, I started the Owen Hart Foundation. If I can just go back a bit, you know, when I was going through my really hard legal battle against the WWE, and you know, and it was really tough. Like, I have to say, it was a knockdown, drag out fight battle against them. You know, and a lot of people might not realize this, but they actually sued me for breach of Owen's contract. And I do talk about this in the episode. I wish we could have gotten into it a little bit deeper, but they...
How could they sue you for breaching his contract?
Well, it was the craziest thing because they had in their contract that, you know, you could only sue them in Connecticut. But I wasn't suing them about Owen's contract. It was something totally different. But, you know, through that process of the lawsuit, they were trying everything and anything to muddy the waters or just intimidate me. And so they were just kind of throwing everything at me, you know, and that was also part and parcel of like sort of manipulating Owen's family and muddying the waters and just drawing it out, you know, because this was a company, they have deep pockets and they could pay lawyers forever to keep this case just, you know, going and going. And so it had gotten so nasty and so ugly. Like, my lawyers, we couldn't even conduct depositions. We had to actually have a judge in the room just to conduct like basic, you know, depositions because the lawyers were always at each other and they couldn't get anything done. Like, it was so vicious. And then Vince sued me because he wanted the case moved to Connecticut because in Missouri, you're allowed punitive damages, but in Connecticut, you're not. So he was so worried that, you know, oh my God, like there's so much negligence here, like that the, you know, the punitive damages are just going to be like through the roof. So he sued me, which was really tough because I had to actually hire lawyers in Connecticut to fight that lawsuit while I was battling the wrongful death lawsuit in Kansas City. And then with the family, you know, working against me and everything was such a mess. It was just so discouraging and awful. And so then, you know, we had, we'd wanted to stop the delay of like the, you know, they were delaying. And so then my lawyers said, listen, if we put a number on the table, they won't accept it. But then what happens is the interest starts running on that number. And that will prompt them to speed up the lawsuit. They'll stop delaying. So it was a tactic. So then we put this number on the table that, you know, again, like I didn't want them to accept because I wanted this to go to trial. I wanted accountability. I wanted justice.
Right.
And then we got to the last day where they had the chance to accept it. And then I said to my lawyers, like I kind of panicked. And then I phoned my lawyer and I said, like, oh my God, like I never thought about the possibility. What if they accept it? Then where's my justice? Like I don't get my day in court. And then she said something to me that just sort of like, it was like a bomb dropped. And she said, well, you know, like at the end of the day, like all it's going to come down to is money. That's all this is going to, and no one's going to jail. No one's, you know,
right.
And I'd never thought about it, you know, because all I was just so hell bent on was getting justice. And then when she said that, it was crushing to me to think like, this is just going to be about money in the end. And then it just kind of came to me like a flash of light. And I was like, you know what, then I'm going to make my own justice. And what I'm going to do is no matter how this thing ends, I am going to start the Owen Hart Foundation. And so it was just like this insight that was just instant that, and then it was just like it uplifted me. And then I was like, I don't care now how this ends because I know what I'm doing with it afterwards. And then, you know, that's sort of how like my evolution of thought process got me to the point where I could settle the case because before I looked at settlement like failure. You know, it was like, I don't want that. I want to be in court and I want accountability. But then when I realized I wasn't really going to get the justice that I was looking for legally, so I was going to create my own justice. So I created the Owen Hart Foundation in sort of like Owen's spirit, that, you know, it would sort of resemble his kindness and his humanity. Because another thing people might not realize is just how incredibly kind Owen was. He was the kindest person I ever met. And he was so non-judgmental. He accepted everyone at face value. He never judged anybody. And he would do things that, like, people, it's just kind of unheard of. Like, I remember one time he saw this homeless guy and he was just checking out of his hotel. And so he said to the guy, you know what, like, I'm leaving early, like, this room, you know, you got it till whatever time if you want to go in and have a nap. And wow, there's like leftover pizza. And he said, just don't break anything, you know. So he just like he would do stuff like that all the time. Like, he helped people all the time, you know. So that's where, you know, with the foundation, it was just like, oh, this is just like mirroring like how nice he and how kind he was. So our mandate's education. We have two signature programs. We provide scholarships for students in need, and also we have a housing component where we help families to purchase homes. And then we also have a partnership program where we partner with lots of other organizations. So we help schools all over the world. We do so much stuff. Like, I really encourage people to go and check out what we do, because yeah, I could talk about it all day. And I'm really glad, like, my kids are super involved, and they, you know, they really help out lots with the foundation. And, you know, like,
you had Jerry Seinfeld come perform. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, we have. So every year, I should mention that too, we do a high profile entertainer event for the Owen Hart Foundation. It's our big fundraiser. And over the years, like, we've had so many amazing performers. And you're right, we had Jerry Seinfeld. He came in for our 10th anniversary, and he just came in again for our 20th anniversary. But we've had like Robin Williams and Steve Martin, Martin Short. Like, we've had,
wow, that's huge.
Just like, so, like, we've had so many great entertainers. We had like Ringo Starr, we had, you know, Howie Mandel, we had like Russell Brand, like so many great comedians, you know, so over the years. And musicians too, like Elvis Costello and Sarah McLachlan. And so, you know, yeah, so it's been really good. We had Bob Newhart, which I loved. And, you know, we just had so many great people come in for us. And now it was interesting because it was really hard to get going with those types of events. But now we've built up such a great reputation as really having these amazing high profile events, that now it's nice because we have a good reputation, and now they're happy to come in for us. It's not such a grind to kind of get people. And we had Alec Baldwin, which I loved because he did the whole Trump thing, and that was really great.
So it's become a big name thing. So it's easier to attract the stars because you have this reputation, like you said.
Yeah, so nice. Yeah.
So here's another thing, is that people always talk about Owen, and we're talking about foundation, but what about you? You said you went to university and you have done all this stuff, this great work. Tell us about what do you do?
Okay. Well, I actually feel really lucky because I got to finish my education, which was really important to me. And that's kind of why we made education like the mandate of the Owen Hart Foundation too, because it's a nice big umbrella that we can fit a lot of stuff under. But I really feel lucky that I was able to go to Cambridge University, which was such an amazing experience in England. And now I work for the University of Calgary and the Alberta Children's Hospital. And wearing my doctor's hat, I'm able to help people in need, but, you know, by doing research. And we actually, our research team developed this incredible parenting intervention called Attach. And it actually got funded by Harvard University. And now we've just received a great big grant from the Canadian government to scale it out to the public. So I feel really happy that like every aspect of my life, I'm able to help people like with my work hat on, but also with my Owen Hart Foundation hat. So I finally feel like it's all tied together nicely. And I do have to say one thing I like to do that's just sort of for fun. I mentioned that like I really love movies, and I'm the vice president of the Monaco International Film Festival.
Wow.
And so that's a lot of fun. And that's just, just like a hobby. I love movies. But I actually have a movie blog where I write about movies. And my tagline is, find out the meaning of life through the movies you watch. And then it's a nice blog. It's positive. Like, and I just talk about like the takeaway messages from movies. So what's the lesson that this movie wants you to learn, and like the life kind of thing. So you know what, something to kind of like look into if you're interested in movies like I am. And I always put some kind of a personal like aspect in of my own life too, so that way that I'm kind of sharing with the readers too about myself.
What's the blog called?
It's just called Movie Meanings.
Movie Meanings, got it.
Yeah, and it's just Martha Hart, Movie Meanings and Messages.
But you're actually a doctor. It's Dr. Martha Hart.
It is doctor, yes. Well, and the funny thing is, I worked so hard to get my PhD that for the first year after I got it, I made all my friends call me doctor, because it's like, no, I worked really
doctor,
hard for
doctor.
This. So, but you don't have to call me doctor anymore. So.
No, when you're a doctor, you're a doctor forever. You're now Dr. Martha Hart.
Thank you.
So last couple questions. Do you have a favorite memory of Owen that stands out for you? And the other one is, what's your favorite Owen Hart match? That's a twofold question.
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? I'd have to say, I probably have a few favorite memories for sure. But favorite matches, he did some amazing matches with Hase, who was a Japanese wrestler.
Oh, Hiro Hase, yeah.
Yeah. And Hase was a great guy. I think he probably ended up becoming part of the corporate side of.
He actually became a Japanese senator, believe it or not.
Okay. Yeah, because he was a really smart guy, too. So some of Owen's matches with Hiro Hase were just off the charts. Mm-hmm. And then I think too, of course, his matches with Brett were really, a highlight for him too.
Yeah.
So I think those were some really good matches. He had a lot of good matches, mm-hmm. with all his like just acrobatic ability, and, even Muck and Singh, who was, this great big monster of a guy from Calgary days, Owen could take a guy like him, and he wasn't the high flyer, but they created this whole.
No, he was the base though. They had great matches because Muck and Singh was the base for all the stuff that Owen did. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great call.
That's right. So, I mean, there's lots of really good matches that he had, but those are probably the ones that kind of stand out in my mind. And as far as memories go, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Millions,
honestly, because our time was so precious, and I really treasured every minute that we got to spend together, they're just all really special. And of course, when you have your kids and you share that, and your wedding, or different memories for sure, like all of it's great. But I think because our time was so limited together and it was really cherished and precious, then, I really just, that was always the reward for me. Mm-hmm. It was all the hard work when he was gone. And then when he'd come home, that was always the reward, right? That I got to spend time with him, and he was my favorite person on the planet. Yeah. So,
well, I'm really glad that we got to do this, and I'm really glad that you're doing this. And I think you're going to get a lot of response from this, from people who are really happy to hear this story, not the end of it, but the middle of it, the beginning of it. And I think a lot of people are going to start remembering what a great person, what a great performer Owen Hart was and is forever.
Well, I'm really grateful too that, I've finally had an opportunity to share everything where, like you said, it's sort of out of the box of a WWE platform. And so I'm happy that I've had the opportunity to let people know a little bit more about what Owen was like and how special he was as not only just a husband and a father and a human being, but, you know, also as a wrestler, because that's how they knew him. And now it's nice because they can know all sides of right. him. And that's really special. And hopefully I've been able to kind of inform them. And I'm really happy that I know he still has a lot of fans. And so I'm happy we could do something positive for his fans as well.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Martha. That was just a pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, really nice to talk to you too, Chris. Thanks.